Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele. I hope everybody had a great weekend. I know I did. Saw one good movie and we had another good episode of The Last of Us, and that's ending next week. I can't believe it. It's been 9 weeks already. How time flies when you're having fun. Speaking of having fun, we're going to have fun today. We got a lot of fun stuff, fun stories for you on the way. So a couple things off the top. So WGAs were last night. So anybody who's familiar with that is the Writers Guild of America. Now, there are a lot of guilds out there. So you've got the PGA, the Producers Guild of America. You've got the DGA, the Directors Guild of America, the WGA, which is the Writers Guild of America. It can get a lot very confusing. What didn't get confusing, though, is that Everything Everywhere All at Once is just blowing everybody away right now. Took home a couple more awards last night, and it's rolling. It basically swept all the guilds. So it's looking like that is going to be your perennial favorite to win the Oscar. There's only been four films to do that. Okay. American Beauty, Slumdog Millionaire, Argo, and you had one other one. So it's rare. It's rare, and it looks like, and by the way, as I said, all those won Best Picture. So, I mean, if that's any indication, precursors, we're looking at probably Everything Everywhere All at Once as your Best Picture winner. So that's good to see. So that's the first off the top. The second off the top, we had a little trailer drop today. It was animated. I know Kyle is looking forward to it greatly. And this is supposed to be released August 4th, I believe. It's the first week in August. And that is the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle animated movie on Netflix. So this is produced by Seth Rogen. And so it's called Mutant Mayhem. And it looks fun. I'm not going to say I'm dying to see it, but it looks interesting. I'm really fascinated to see how that does. And especially with all of the things, going to be out. But it doesn't have to worry about budget and, everything else like that. So we'll see how it goes. So I'm curious to see where that goes. Okay, so let's get into our main topics today. So our first main topic is about a film that basically just... So it came out, it was released this last weekend. And I'm talking about Creed 3. Creed 3, I saw it Saturday. And I saw it in IMAX. So one of the things about IMAX, one of the advantages about IMAX is that when things are shot in IMAX, they just look incredible, right? So, I liked it. I really, really liked it. So this comes from Variety. Creed 3 emerged victorious with its box office with an impressive $58.7 million debut, setting a franchise record while dethroning two-time domestic chart champ Ant-Man and the Wasp. The film kicked off internationally with $41.8 million, bringing its global tally to $100 million. It's also a big win for theater owners who are banking on the good fortunes to continue in March with upcoming releases Scream 6, which is actually being released this Friday, Shazam! Fury of the Gods, which is being released the next week, and John Wick 4, the week after that. Overall, ticket sales were ahead, 37% ahead of the same point in 2022, according to Comscore. Heading into the weekend, Creed 3 was projected to earn $36 to $40 million, which would have been enough to establish a new high watermark for the series. The first Creed, which launched decades ago, the Rocky films in 2015, powered to $29.6 million, while its 2018 sequel, Creed 2 opened at $35.5 million, which is respectable. But the third installment, directed by series star Michael B. Jordan, and his feature filmmaking debut got a boost from stellar reviews and a strong audience score. Initial ticket buyers who rewarded the film an A-minus cinema score were 63% male, while 55% were ages between 18 and 34. The movie brought out diverse audiences, as 23% were white and 28% Latino, 36% were black, and 13% were Asian, according to Post-Tech data. Creed 3 also benefited from the pricier IMAX tickets. A huge 38% of the business came from premium large format screens, as well as better than expected turnout on a Friday for $22 million alone. Michael did an excellent job launching this film, and in doing so, offering further proof that the box office is back and ready to support this year's strong, diverse slate, said IMAX CEO Richard Goffert. The $75 million budgeted Creed III is the most expensive film in the trilogy. Its predecessors cost $35 and $50 million, respectively. But box office analysts are optimistic about its theatrical run. Jordan stars in the movie as heavyweight champion Adonis Creed, and then Jonathan Majors comes back. So we get a little bit of backstory. It's a big weekend for Majors, who is in the number one and number two movies at the domestic box office. And a distant second was Ant-Man and the Wasp, that had $12 million, marking a 61% decline. And that's generated $186 million here in the States. And it's probably going to go on to make about $500 million total. Now, I should say a couple things before we get to Creed. Number one, Jonathan Majors is just on fire right now. I mean, he is the hottest actor in Hollywood, bar none. You can't find anybody hotter than Jonathan Majors. So to have the number one and the number two movie in the, you know, in the domestic box office is huge. Nothing else you can say about that. The fact that Ant-Man, you know, everybody that I've talked to, and you know, when I watched it myself, I thought Jonathan Majors was the best part of the movie. Yes, the movie had problems. It was okay. It wasn't great, but Jonathan Majors shined, especially with Michelle Pfeiffer. Love that stuff. And now to see him in Creed. So we're getting both the heavy hitter, okay, literally and figuratively in Creed, and we're getting the more gentle side, if you will. I mean, until the villain comes out in Kang. So he's on fire right now. Nothing to be said about that. The film itself. So I would see an IMAX on Saturday, as I said. Theater was, I think, a 140 show. It was really good. I mean, the theater was, there was about 30 people in there. But wow, what a just a great overall film this was for Michael B. Jordan. I'm so happy for him. And he has come so far as not only a actor, but a producer, and basically now a director. And it's one of those things where the sky's the limit for this guy. You know, I could very easily see them making a fourth one of these if they wanted to. I mean, this would be, if they never made another Creed movie again, this would be an excellent closeout film. I don't know if, you know, Tessa Thompson would want to come back or what you would do for a storyline, but it definitely would work. And I think that it's one of those things where it's there if he wants it. This is his franchise right now. And if he wants it, it's his. I think the fact that you had Ryan Coogler in his corner, so to speak, and really, you got to understand something. He's been working with Ryan Coogler for years. And he is one of the best filmmakers out there today. I mean, I rave about it. And there's a little movie out there called Fruitvale Station. And guys, if you haven't seen this movie, go see it. It's incredible. And that's when the relationship with Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan started. And Octavia Spencer's in it, and she was remarkable too. And then you go and, you know, you do Black Panther, you know, and that's amazing. And now, you know, he had a little role in Wakanda Forever, but this is his. And he really absorbed everything about this, the filmmaking and what he did and how he did it and camera shots and angles. And, you know, it's not, those are like one shot, you know, fights. And, you know, I can't say enough about this. Now, were there some things in there that I didn't really like? Yeah, I mean, that's nitpicking. Overall, though, remarkable. Really, really good. I mean, some of the shots, pristine. I can't wait to see if he writes them. If they do a Creed 4, I would love to see him write it. Because I really think he could, you know, take it to a whole new level. And that's one thing that Coogler's, you know, he's taught, you know, he writes and directs all of his films. Now, he had a story credit in this. So, you know, and I'll be honest, the last thing I'll say on this is this. I didn't really notice Sylvester Stallone's absence. This was his franchise, guys. And I really think that, you know, almost $59 million opening weekend. I mean, it's projected at 40 to 45. Yeah, remarkable film. Remarkable film. And I'll be honest with you. He hit a home run here. This was a, quote, knockout, if you will. But I loved it. I loved it. He's going to do bigger and better things. And I can't wait to see what they are. If you're interested, go back. And I think it'll be fascinating for you guys to watch it. Go back and watch the spoiler cast. Between Kyle and I, we did a whole Creed 3 spoiler cast on it. We talk about everything about the movie. We talk about, you know, where they could go from here, the boxing scenes, even the Amara storyline. Like, that was a really cool storyline to see. Yeah, guys, phenomenal. Phenomenal movie. There's a reason why it's number one in the box office. I think, I mean, don't get me wrong, Scream 4 or Scream 6 is going to be big. But I don't think it's going to be able to beat Creed 3. I don't. I think, you know, if you're talking about a 50% drop, it's going to be in that $25 to $30 million range. I don't know if Scream 6, even with the success of it last year, I don't know if it can beat it. So, anyways, what do you guys think? Did you go see Creed 3? If so, what did you think of it? If so, tell me, did you see it in 2D? Did you see it in 3D? I don't think they have it in 3D. But did you see it in IMAX? What did you think about Michael B. Jordan's directorial debut? Did you like it? Do you want to see him make another Creed? Do me a favor. Leave your thoughts down in the comments, and we'll get back to everyone. Let's move on to our second story of the day. So, romantic comedies were one of those things that is very, everybody loves a good rom-com, right? I mean, I'm a sucker for a good rom-com, whether it's While You Were Sleeping or You've Got Mail or When Harry Met Sally or whatever it is, right? So, in budgets, and these aren't usually big budgets, $30, $40, $50 million maybe, you know, and they have a good time with them. So, this is going to be interesting. So Netflix, okay, is now going to, they're going to, actually make a romantic comedy, okay, and the budget for this is going to be about $130 million. So this comes from, the Hollywood Reporter, and Michael Fassbender and Owen Wilson are going to be doing this as well, along with Scarlett Johansson and Penelope Cruz. So, Nancy Myers, who's made some really good movies in the past, is going to be getting back in the director's chair. Nancy Myers is returning to the director's chair, and This will be the first time since she's made a film, movie since 2015's The Intern. The filmmaker is known for her upscale romantic comedies and is back with a project that is attracting A-list talent. Scarlett Johansson is leading this lead role in Meyer's upcoming film for Netflix. Multiple sources have told the THR is with Penelope Cruz, Owen Wilson, and Michael Fassbender, and they're eyeing the project as well. Netflix had no comment. Myers will write, direct, and produce the comedy, which is known as Paris Paramount, although it is not clear if this is an actual title or working title or a code name. Sources say this story centers around a talented young actor-director who falls in love with a producer, with the pair making several successful films before calling it quits romantically and professionally. The two are forced back together, however, when a great new project arises, and they find themselves teamed up again and having to deal with high stakes and volatile stars. There are several parallels with Meyer's own life here. She had had a longtime romantic and professional relationship with Charles Shire, a fellow writer, director, producer, after they made it working in Hollywood together. The pair did and had such movies as Private Benjamin, Father of the Bride, Baby Boom, The Parent Trap, and many more. After Myers and Shire split, Myers went on to write and direct movies such as Something You Give and The Holiday. The project is currently eyeing $130 million to $150 million range, meaning this could be the most expensive romantic comedy to come out of Hollywood ever, with the studio and filmmakers going back and forth over costs, as first reported. It has been in the works for some time, with the studio first announcing the feature in April of last year. A previous incarnation circling late last year had Jennifer Lawrence eyeing the lead before the Oscar winner fell out for unspecific reasons. Romantic comedies have long been the realm of the mid-budget, but Myers has commanded prices on the higher end for her genre. Her productions have earned a lofty price in the rom-com annals, with Architectural Digest-worthy production design and call sheets featuring massive stars such as Jack Nicholson and Meryl Streep. Myers last directed the 2015 comedy The Intern, tells about that, and that, as I said, Scarlett Johansson is going to be the lead. Okay, couple things. Number one, that's huge. Let's call it what it is. That is the biggest budget for romantic comedy of all time. $130 to $150 million. Now look, she's established. Nothing else to say about it, right? You have A-list stars here. You know, Scarlett Johansson, Fassbender, Owen Wilson, Penelope Cruz. You're basing it off your own life, okay, which is good because you basically know the story. I don't know if it's going to be lucrative, okay? The thing is that this is a movie that it's one of those things where, and yes, it's on streaming, but if Netflix is going to be spending $130 to $150 million on this movie, as reports say, how much of a profit or an ROI do they expect? Unless, and here's the one caveat, okay, they could hypothetically put this in theaters. Now, look, with that kind of budget, absolutely. And they would be well served to put it into theaters. I don't know, though, if, you know, look, some of these movies, look, Creed just cost $70 million. This last Creed movie, the first story we were doing today, okay, just cost $70 million to make. Okay? Now, as I read in that article, it gave you the other budgets, okay? This would be twice that amount almost for a romantic comedy. Now, I'm not saying people won't turn out, because they will. But right now, this budget has to get slashed down by at least half to at least make a profit, because this goes into the whole business side of it. If Netflix is willing to spend, or partially spend, let's say it's $100 million. Let's say they talk her down to $100 million. How much money do they think, unless they put this in theaters for a theatrical release, how much are they really going to make from this? I like the idea. Don't get me wrong. Romantic comedies are few and far between now, because it's all about action and superhero and drama and everything else. But how much are you really going to make? And is it worth the time? And I'll be honest with you, I think that's why it's being made by Netflix, because I'm sure she shopped this to studios and they all said, we can't do it. It's too big of a budget. So it will be interesting. The story is there because it's personal. It's based off her own personal life. So she knows better than anybody what she went through and everything else. I don't know, though, if you're going to get that kind of viewership. And if you do, what is your end game if you're Netflix, right? Because look, we've had movies on Netflix, okay? Like The Irishman, for example. Irishman was a $150 million budget, or right around there, okay? Glass Onion was like 60, so 70. Think about that for a minute. Rian Johnson he made a movie for $70 million. I don't know. I like the premise. I'll say it again. I like the premise. But I don't know if it's going to be lucrative for Netflix. Unless they put this in theaters. Even if they do, how long are they going to put it in theaters for? I mean, we've seen it before. All you got to do is take a look at The Irishman that was out a couple years ago. And then Glass Onion. Glass Onion was in theaters 1 week and it made $16 million. Now, that being said, if they put this in theaters, they might get their money back. Might, or close to it. And that's, you got overseas too, but, you're really looking at the domestic. It's a huge, huge budget. I like the idea of a romantic comedy. I like the idea that she's going to, base this partially off her own life. I don't know, though, how much money this is going to make if this just stays on streaming. And can Netflix sustain this? So there's a lot of questions swirling around this as far as the business side of it. Not the picture, because look, everybody, I like Michael Fassbender. I mean, I have my thoughts on him. Okay. Michael Fassbender is a phenomenal actor. Okay. But you look at everything since 2015 and it's plummeted. There's no doubt. That loss that night, and look, I'm not blaming him, but that loss that night to Leonardo DiCaprio almost tanked his career. Everybody knew going in Leo was going to win the Oscar, only because he had been nominated so many times, and it was I love Steve Jobs. I love Steve Jobs. I think he did a phenomenal, that's why he got nominated, right? Any other year, he would have won the Oscar. But you got to take a look at the projects he did after. Usually, when you have an actor that gets an Oscar nomination, okay, his star goes up. He gets better projects, better pay, everything else. Because of that loss, you take a look at the films that he did after, Assassin's Creed, Dark Phoenix, X-Men Dark Phoenix, and The Snowman. All of them were subpar at best. I'll be gentle. Subpar. Anyways, this looks like a fun cast, though. It really does. I think that, it looks like a fun cast. I'm curious to see where it goes. I'm kind of curious to see if the budget comes down. But this is in the very, very early stages. I'm sure we're going to hear much, much more about this as the days and weeks go on. So what do you guys think about this? What do you think about, you know, the whole mixture of, you know, all those five stars together? Do you think Netflix would put this in theaters to try and make some of their money back? Would you see a romantic comedy with those stars in it? Or would you kind of wait to see what happens? Leave me your thoughts down in the comment section, and I'll get back to you. Okay, so let's move on to our next story. And our next story, so as we did, and it was a very short stream, but I did a stream about the 8th episode, All You Would Need, last night. And so we finally got the appearance. So the very first trailer of the last, when The Last of Us came out, I watched it a couple times, as everybody did, and I went, is that Troy Baker? And it was. So Troy Baker is he was finally in last night's episode, the 8th one. So this comes from Variety, and basically it's talking about how he his role and passing the baton on to Pedro Pascal. So, Troy Baker has been in the center of the Last of Us universe for a decade. The esteemed voice actor originated the role of the grisly survivalist Joel Miller in the 2013 game and its sequel in 2020. While HBO's series adaptation was announced, Baker did not expect to be a part of it. If there's a role for me, then I would be happy. But if not, I was completely content just to be an observer for this one, he says. Luckily, co-showrunner Neil Druckmann, who is also the co-creator of the game, had a role for him in mind. Baker navigates Episode 8, While We Are in Need, as James, the right-hand man of the cannibalistic cult leader David, played by Scott Shepard. Speaking to Variety on the episode's premiere, Baker broke down how he felt about Pedro Pascal's performance as Joel and what it was like to assume a new role. So this piece is an interview they did with him, but let me just go back to what it was. I love the episode. It just, whenever you think this show can't get any better, it does. It just does. And it amazes me how they've been able to do it time after time after time. So having played the game, having played and beat both games, I knew what was going to happen. But it's still one of those things where it's a very interesting dynamic. So in the interview, basically goes on and asks about his role as a cannibal. He thought he was going to be a clicker, you know, and he thought, you know, he was going to have a little, he didn't think it was going to be a speaking part. I loved, you know, James and everything else. I'm really curious to see in the finale this upcoming week if we see him or what happens or how it happens or whatnot. But it was a really good, he did amazing for the small part he had. And what he said essentially in the article is he wanted to challenge himself because, you know, people wanted to, you know, he wanted to bring a different kind of person to the role. And he has a moral compass, and he has this moral, he has a morality. I won't say he has a conflict. He has a conflict with morality, right? Because on the one hand, he wants to please David, okay, who is the leader, and he's, you know, an evil, evil guy. But on the other hand, he's also realizing that, hey, you know, I'm not, you know, there's a spoilers now. This is going to go into a spoiler territory for everybody. But, you know, he's going to shoot up, you know, he finds her, Ellie, and he doesn't shoot her, but he shoots the horse, right? Because he didn't want to kill her. And then when he walks over and he's, you know, gets the bullet out of the chamber and he's about to shoot her, and David walks over and says, don't shoot the girl. And so basically hunting her, he says, you know, this is another mouth to feed. We've got our own problems. And David was like, you know, we're going to save her because she is, you know, another human being like us. It was very interesting to see the dynamic. I'm very curious to see where they go in the finale. I thought he did a phenomenal job, though. It was well done. It was interesting. And, you know, I mean, that end, the end that he met when he got that cleaver to the neck, wow. And they just, they know how to do violence. And it was just, it was quick, it was swift, and it was the end of him. So, I liked the episode last night. I'm really interested in seeing what they do for the finale. And I can't wait. But yeah, Troy Baker finally made an appearance last night. He did a great job. And I think that he'll continue. Whatever he does, he's going to continue to do great work. And yeah, so we'll see what happens next week. And I'll have a little schedule. We'll talk about that later on. Before the end of the show, and see what happens there. What did you guys think about Troy Baker's performance? Did you like it? Did you wish he was in it more? Do you think he was a better Joel than Pedro is right now? You know, so are you going to watch the finale? You know? Anyways, leave me your thoughts down in the comments, and I'll get back to everybody. Okay. So our final story of the day is about an event coming up at the end of this week, and that is the Oscars. And the Oscars is one of those things that it's every single year. It's arguable. So it's our, for everybody that's a movie fan, it's our Super Bowl. It's our Super Bowl. It's the, this is the biggest night of the year. While the, you know, last year was interesting, we're not going to have that, hopefully, but nonetheless, this is the biggest night in the year. We have had so many different, the journey to get to this point has been very long and very arduous, through all of the award shows, through all of the Guild Awards, but it's been worthwhile. And now we're going to be here next week, and it's going to be interesting. So, as I said off the top, okay, Everything Everywhere All at Once looks like it's the perennial favorite, right? It's swept all the guilds. There's only been 4 other films to do that and win Best Picture, okay? Argo, Slumdog Millionaire, American Beauty, you know. And there's a lot of great contenders out there, too. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the whole thing plays out, and everything else. So, the reason why I bring this up is, according to the fans, and this comes from The Wrap, and the fandom points to Avatar The Way of Water winning Best Picture, and Austin Butler winning Best Actor. So, fandoms, according to the Oscars survey, that Avatar, The Way of Water, takes the Oscar for Best Picture over Top Gun Maverick, if we're up to fans. James Cameron's long-awaited sequel was the favorite of 15 states, such as Washington, Oklahoma, Illinois, New York, and Alabama. While Tom Cruise's equally long-awaited sequel takes second place as a top film in 13 states, including California, Oregon, Nevada, Montana, Wyoming, North Carolina, and Maine, among others. Elvis came in third place with votes for Best Picture. Austin Butler's portrayal of Elvis was a fan favorite of 9 states, including Arizona, New Mexico, Minnesota, and more, with 36% of the votes going to him to win the Oscar for Best Actor. Colin Farrell received 29% of the votes, and Brendan Fraser received 23% of the votes. Butler placed third in the best actor, the rankings by state, with 12 states backing him. Colin Farrell would receive the top vote in 16 states for his role in Banshees of Inisherin. Brendan Fraser leads the best actor race with 17 states favoring him. Fandom study analyzed 40 million pages of content on the internet to yield the results. State by state, date and generational breakdowns come from page view indexed by state and generation. Everything Everywhere All at Once was the favorite of 8 states: Texas, Wisconsin, Michigan, Indiana, Tennessee, Florida, Maryland, and Massachusetts. Michelle Yeoh received 36% of the vote for the Academy Award for Best Actress. Cate Blanchett dominates the Best Actress bracket by state, with 18 states favoring her performance in Tar. Next in line, Michelle Yeoh with 11, 8 for Michelle Williams, and 8 for Ana de Armas, and 5 for Andrew Riseborough. Generationally, Cate Blanchett has the Gen Z, Millennium, and Baby Boomer vote for Best Actress. Her role as Helena in Thor and Lord of the Rings make her the familiar Gen Z to Millennials, respectfully. Millennial and Gen Z want Brendan Fraser to win the Oscar for Best Actor because they recognize him from Scrubs, but the Gen Z and Baby Boomers would cast their vote for Colin Farrell after seeing him in The Batman and True Detective. The Millennium Best Picture would go to Avatar: The Way of Water due to the first film's release back in 2009, with other generations backing Top Gun Maverick. So this was a fun little thing done by them to basically say, if you had your vote to do whatever you wanted for the Oscars, what would you do? And how would you do it? And it's fascinating because it's one of those things where it's all based off of analytics, right? They take ages, they take ethnicities, they take, you know, Gen Z or millennial or whatever else, and they factor that into that. And to get that, so they would have Avatar: The Way of Water win over Everything Everywhere All at Once, which, by the way, picked up 11 Academy Award nominations. And it's just fascinating in that respect. I think that I think there would be a lot of angry people. I think there would be a lot of angry people if they did it by that vote. Nonetheless, I think a couple things are really evident. And that is that Everything Everywhere All at Once is going to have a huge night. And that, you know, it's probably going to walk away with 4 to 5 Oscars. So, I mean, you're talking about Best Original Screenplay. You're talking about Best Actress. You're talking about just Best Picture. A lot of them. And so it's always fun to have the what if, right? So what if this was done by the fans instead of the pundits? I think that it would be very, very interesting. That would be, I think, what the Academy should do if they really want to do that. And I think they have something like this, and I'm not familiar with it. They should have one category specifically by the fans, so you can vote, you know, or make the fans vote just like that. Not very large, but, you know, so they feel like they're participating. But nonetheless, it's going to be a fun night, and there's going to be a lot of Oscars given out. And so on that note, let me say this, that Matthew Anderson, our perennial Oscar predictor, he showed me some of the spreadsheets that he's done. Guys, it's incredible. He has it broken down by precursor. So let me back up and say this. A precursor is like one of these other award shows. So, for example, Michelle Yeoh, Cate Blanchett, or anybody We'll take acting for a minute. He has it broken down by every award show, which is the Globes, the BAFTAs, you know, the SAGs, all of these other award shows, that plus, like, what, he's just an incredible breakdown. So he got, a couple years ago, he ended up getting 14 of 16 right. And that's unbelievable. So we're going to have him back on the show on Saturday. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be a blast. He came on when the nominations were announced. We're going to have him back on again. So stay tuned for that on Saturday. But yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be very, very fascinating. Now, on more, because of the scheduling conflict, and this is where I was going. So what we're going to do is we are not going to do The Last of Us on Sunday, okay? Because it's Hollywood's biggest night. It's the Oscars. The Last of Us will always be on streaming for you guys to watch, and we will watch that. And I will be doing the stream for that on Monday. So the 13th, I've yet to figure out a time in the afternoon, but we're going to do that there. And we're going to do a show, too. So you guys will get two shows in that respect. And so that's it. That's it for today. I would just say this, guys, that stay tuned, because we have a lot of stuff coming up for you in the near future. You know, we just did Creed 3 the other day. You know, tomorrow... or Wednesday, I'm so mixed up with my day. Sorry, guys. Wednesday, we are going to be having, or we are going to be, well, tomorrow, we've got a special guest. Parks Harmon is coming on, and he is a YouTuber. He's done some phenomenal videos, guys. I will put his link in the description. But he just did an incredible, incredible video about The Last of Us. And can't believe that's turning 10 this year, the game is. And the second game, The Last of Us 2, is turning 3, actually. And we're going to be putting out a video much later in the year for that. But yeah, and so we're going to have Parks on tomorrow. I'm going to talk all about his career and what he's doing and, you know, all that great stuff. Then on Wednesday, we will have The Mandalorian. And then on Saturday, we will have Matthew on in prelude for a preview of the Oscars. So, and then, guys, like I said, we've got our perfect movies. We've got our, you know, the roundup. We've got all these spoiler casts coming up. You know, we've got a ton of stuff. So if I could just ask one thing, please hit that like and subscribe button. This is the only way it gets out to the masses, and I want it to get out to people. And yeah, it's going to be a fun time. So definitely stay tuned. Definitely keep an eye out, and we will have more stuff coming your way. Okay, guys, that's it for today's show. So do the three things that you need to do. Be safe, be careful, and have a great day. I'm David Steele, and you have been watching Real Talks. Bye-bye, guys. We'll be right back.